you know, you got a chance to work with the offensive line because Deion did not hold back at the end of last season. He, you know, pretty much said our offensive line is bull junk.
Mm-hmm.
Went out and replaced the whole offensive line. So it is supposed to be much better. And if this team is going to do at least a flip from 4-8 to 8-4, which is what people like me are saying is the baseline for what would be a successful mm-hmm. season, 8-4, well, you got to get some opening. It's early. It's only spring football. But about this new look offensive line?
Yeah, it is. It is
a lot of hesitation here, folks. Well, a lot of hesitation.
No.
Searching for words.
They went out and they purchased themselves, you know, in the portal. By the way, the portal opens up again Tuesday. So you're going to see CUB. I'm sure they're going to be very active in that. But they're bigger and more talented. Now, that's great, but you know, that position is so nuanced and that there's so much skill involved in that position. Then also five guys becoming one. And that's really what they need to work at, is those five guys really tied together as one unit. And, that's what has to transpire over this spring and early next summer.
Did you get a chance to talk to Pat Shurmur?
Yeah.
I don't know what you can share, but did anything come up about his time here with the Broncos and how people just kind of hold Pat Shurmur's name in disdain?
We were actually trying to throw incompletions.
Did he share anything about his time with the Broncos and how he feels about Broncos country?
No,
sometimes there's not much scoring in the first half of games.
I think he's... You know, I think number one, no animosity, like love Denver, love like the facility and the organization is great. I think Pat's feeling is, and again, I'm paraphrasing, not him, but you know, like you and I have talked about, talent wise, they weren't the most talented group. I will say this, though. Pat raves about Shadur and his just football acumen, his understanding and his ability to see it quickly and make quick decisions. Just raves about how advanced he is as a quarterback in the college game. Just completely, you know, advanced and knows kind of pre-snap what he wants to do, where he wants to go with the football, but his ability to read it out and make good decisions. There is no question that kid is super talented.
All right. By the way, that stud tackle they got, Jordan Seaton?
Uh-huh.
Big dude.
You're big kid, yeah.
But do you see greatness there?
Oh, yeah, he's got potential to be really, really good. They've got a couple kids that I think have potential to be really good. Again, it's just a matter of understanding how to play together and then understanding the nuanced aspect of the game. Yeah, where do you want to funnel guys? How do you want to set guys up? Like I had talked to Deion about is, you know, one of the things I always talk to NFL teams about when I'm talking to them is being able to take the passive out of pass protection. How do you do that? Right. How do you in a college game where, you know, it's 90%, you know, open edges and, you know, and four wides and, you know, your number one personnel group in college football is 10 personnel, four wide receivers, you know, and no tight ends so it's like it's one back and, you know, and no tight ends. So four wide receivers. So. Like, that's the number one personnel grouping in football, in college football. You don't ever get into that, hardly ever get into that personnel grouping in professional football.
I want to move on to some other stuff, but I know that you are not a big fan of college football.
No, not
you
at
do
all.
Not like the way the game's played.
No.
Being there in Boulder around the Buffs and watching the way that they go about their mm-hmm. business, did it? Did it change your mind at all, or did it only reaffirm the idea of
do you believe
how much you hate the way the college football is played? And you're not, I know you're not calling out CU because CU's they're all doing the same thing.
Mm.
But did you come away seeing it up close, going like at times where you're like, you know, biting your tongue, like, I don't like the way you guys do this.
Yeah,
in college football.
Yeah, I mean, I talked to Pat about it. Shermer, I mean, it's just like I hate the spread nature. So one of the things I hate about spread, if we're gonna have this conversation, is that you're always gonna face dime or nickel situations in the college game, right? And then you're already because you're always in gun, you're already dictating 60% of the plays are gonna run opposite where the back lines up. So you're already giving the defense a tip, even if you've got a light box and you know they're gonna run it. You already have a great idea of where the ball is going. So now we have to physically be able to be dominant, technique and physicality-wise, up front. And then on top of it is you're facing and you're run-blocking pass players, which would make you think, hey, man, we've got an advantage. But where your disadvantage is athleticism. Those guys are so, I mean, you're trying to climb up to a defensive back who's playing nickel or dime. And he's lined up as a linebacker. And he just runs right by you, makes you miss, and he's tackling our back in the backfield because he's a like athlete. And so for me, a lot of that run option or even that pass pro becomes you're trying to have a 280-pound or 300-pound offensive lineman, you know, slide and kick out to a DB who's running 4.38. Size is to your advantage, but athleticism is to their advantage. So I'm a big believer in getting big, you know, and having them have to match you with big people. And if you keep little people in there, then we're going to bludgeon you. And so, you know, just tying the run game, tying pass protection, you know, tying the marriage between play action and the run game and all that stuff, they don't do a good job of that. I mean, the RPO game is certainly there and the run action stuff, but I just don't think they do a very good job of that in college. And Pat is, to Pat's credit, he's bringing in some West personnel, some too tight stuff, you know, so they do mix it up to a degree, but it's just a different game. And then the game is played outside the numbers. And it's very apparent that the game is played outside the numbers in college where it's in the middle of the football field in professional.
Well, apparently you made a good impression because you're going back up there again next Saturday, huh?
Yeah, it looks that way. If I can, I got to clear some things up on my schedule, you know.
Oh, of course. Busy. Very busy man.
You got to have my people people.
Let's face it. I'd love to, Dion, but I don't know. I got to mow my lawn for like the fourth time this week, so I'm not sure. I'll get back to you. Mm-hmm. I'll let you know. James Merrillat's going to be joining us coming up here in about 30 minutes. Guess what, Stump James has jumped back up on yesterday.
Oh, let me guess. Like,
what do you think?
If they don't get out of the first round, if the Avs don't get to the Western Conference Finals, that Bednar needs to go.
And
Michael Malone too.
And Malone. He's back on the Malone and Bednar kick.
Wow. How far do they have to go before they get fired?
Well, yeah, part of what James had to say was eye-rolling. The Michael Malone's not going anywhere. Nuggets could lose in the first round of the playoffs, and Michael Malone's not going anywhere.
Settle down just a little bit.
Okay?
Correct.
Because they won the championship last year. Jared Bednar. Now, that is a debate worth having. Because the Avalanche, you know, you focus on them winning the Stanley Cup in 2022. But before that and after that, so in 2018, when this team started to become a playoff team, okay, 2018, losing the first round. 2019, losing the second round. 2020, losing the second round. 2021, losing the second round. 2022, win the cup. 2023, losing the first round. This is a team that in 6 years of playoff action, 5 of the 6 years they have not made it past the second round. Now, the one glorious year they win the cup. But I've always believed, and any Avalanche fan who was a big Avalanche fan during that time will agree with me, they left a cup on the table back with that team that they had, the Sakic, Forsberg, Waugh team. They left a cup on, they should have had three.
Okay.
They left a cup on the table. So if this team doesn't make it past the second round, is Jared Bednar's job in jeopardy? Should it be in jeopardy? Because then you would be looking at 6 of 7 years where you didn't get past the second round. Is one Stanley Cup in the middle of that 7-year playoff run enough to justify moving forward with Bednar?
His job's in jeopardy. It's like the Greg Kinn band. Remember
except,
that?
Except their love is in jeopardy, right?
Da, 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 da. Baby, how did the song go? Something in jeopardy.
The great Rogue's looking at you like
the Greg Kinn band.
Don't tell me I have to
Rogue.
Look
it up.
You don't have to. You don't have to, Rogue.
Our love's in jeopardy?
I think so.
I lost in jeopardy.
You lost in jeopardy,
baby.
That's right. But I think that Malone. No, if I know James goes back to the. You'd think that James would be, he was put in his place for a while with Bednar and Malone both winning championships. But let's just say, he crawled out from beneath his rock and he's back banging that drum.
You ain't got no haters, you ain't popping.
With Malone, sorry, James, your cries will go unheard, unfulfilled. Bednar, though, I think that is fair to say that if this team does not make it past at least the second round, yeah. I think it's, hey, the NHL, man, the NHL does not hesitate to fire coaches.
No, they'll get rid of a coach in
our league. I can't think of another league that goes through coaches as rapidly and as easily as NHL does. So,
dude, you don't play good for 2 weeks. You can get your coach fired. Like, players can get their coach fired in a heartbeat.
Yep.
They don't like him. They just don't skate well for 2 weeks. He gets fired. I don't feel that way about Bedsy, though. I feel like they respect Bedsy, don't you think?
It's not a matter of respect, Mark. It's a matter of results. And if there's any sense that, like, okay, is because I if they don't make it past the second round, I'm not going to put it on Bednar. I'm going to put it on a front office that acknowledged that coming off their Stanley Cup season, they acknowledged that they did not put a good enough supporting cast around the team the year after they won the cup. They admitted that by changing out the whole supporting cast for this year. And then they admitted that the moves that they made for the supporting cast, they had made a mistake on because they greatly changed the look of the team after the trade deadline. So you got a front office that has admitted twice with their moves, with their actions. Classic case of don't listen to what they say, watch what they do. With their actions, twice they have acknowledged that they didn't do a good enough job of building around this core.
Well, the front office, I mean, who fires and hires coaches?
Well, there you go.
Front office.
Well, there you go.
So they'll say we've done a good enough job.
There you go.
Coach didn't do a good enough job of figuring out how to use them.
There you go. That's why if they don't make it past the second round, that is why I'm saying Bednar's job could be in jeopardy. Because at that point, good Avalanche fans, good Avalanche media, not just simply fanboy cheerleaders, should be asking the tough question. Hey, you got one of the best, if not the best, cores in hockey. You've got arguably the best defenseman in hockey. You're going to have the MVP of hockey.
Mm-hmm.
Why, with this group, have you only gotten past the second round of the playoffs once in the last, half dozen years?
I think it's fair. I mean, that's a fair criticism or question, right? I think it's fair. Expectations not being met. Somebody has to pay the price.
Texter says, you are whining and short-sighted. You have a top player on long-term injured reserve that is glue for your team. Most of the league would trade positions with your team and your coach. Well, if you're a good hockey fan, I'm sure you are, you would recognize that coaches equal to Jared Bednar or even better than Jared Bednar have been fired in these kind of situations. And the bit about Landeskog, I'm sorry, you can't use Landeskog's injury as an excuse. He hasn't played in 2 years.
Right.
It's not like this snuck up on you. It's not like you didn't have a chance to prepare for it. You were still able to stash his salary on long-term injured reserve. It wasn't like you were hamstrung with him on your active salary cap roster. You didn't have to worry about that. So, no, I'm sorry. You can't use
the other thing
Landeskog's injury as an excuse. Nope.
The other thing is you can't, as an organization, you know how precarious this injury is. You can't sit there and go, okay, we're going to put our hope in, like you did last year and this year, Landeskog's return. Like, you have to make a decision, and you have to use, you know, some common sense in that decision to know you can't dangle that carrot out there and go, well, yeah, but what if, you know, what if something miraculous happens? Then praise God. That would be awesome. But the odds are, guess what? It's not going to miraculously heal. He's not going to feel like himself. There is going to be a process in getting him ready to play. And, you know, the last 2 years, I mean, for the last 2 years we've been here, but what if Landy comes back? But what if, I mean, last year he was working, right? And then all the way up to the point where they were like, no, now we're going to go do this, you know, Petri dish cartilage replacement. That's going to get it done. Okay. Yeah, that one you can save that argument, because they knew, even though they told you as a fan, hey, there's a chance, even though they told you that, they just lied to you.
So we'll have James coming on in about 25 minutes or so. He can expound more on why he believes Michael Malone and Jared Bednar are on the hot seat going into this playoff. Cecil Lammy with his weekend thoughts on a Monday at denversports.com, looking ahead to the draft, as this is the calm before the storm this week, with the draft coming up next week. He says, in his belief, the Patriots run this draft.
Okay.
Because he says the Bears are going to take Caleb Williams with the number one pick and believes the Commanders will take Jaden Daniels off the board at number two. And that leaves the Patriots at number three. And Patriots met with J.J. McCarthy last night.
Okay.
But I've also read and heard stuff that the Patriots would be willing to move off that number three spot. It would take a haul. It would take basically the equivalent of four first-round picks for them to move. Meaning three picks and a player, you know, like a like if the Broncos were to do it, it'd be three picks and Patrick Surtain.
Yeah, so you have to flip the 12. Then you have to give your 2025 and 2026 first rounder.
Right.
And Surtain.
And Surtain. To move up to three. What do you mean? You wouldn't do it?
To get what?
To get the guy that Sean Payton, you've told me this before, that Sean Payton was ready to take Patrick Mahomes.
Correct.
Already had Drew Brees.
Mm-hmm.
Was ready to take Mahomes. And then Kansas City jumped up ahead of them. So, if this is a guy who already had Drew Brees but recognized something in Patrick Mahomes, if he sees something in one of these quarterbacks, but it would mean him moving up to three, do it, man. Do it.
You know, I've always been a trading known commodities for unknown commodities, and I've never been big on that. You know, when you're trading unknown commodities for unknown commodities, meaning draft picks for draft picks, that's one thing if you've got a great feel for a guy, but putting Surtain in there with the uncertainty of all these quarterbacks, I mean, Caleb Williams included.
But I see what you, I know what you're saying, the uncertainty of these guys, the whole draft a quarterback, any quarterback philosophy, you hate it, I hate it as well. But why was Sean Payton brought here?
To fix it, to find it.
To fix it.
Right.
But in order to fix it, what do you got to find?
You're going to have to find a quarterback eventually.
Correct. Why do you give up what you give up for a Sean Payton, trade for a Sean Payton, pay a Sean Payton, give Sean Payton the power? It's because you trust his evaluation, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if Sean sees something in J.J. McCarthy or Drake May that he feels that is the next great quarterback in the NFL that I can work with and turn into a superstar, then you know what? You give up that package.
Yeah.
If he looks at, and I'm just plugging in names here now, if he looks at J.J. McCarthy as, you know, my next Drew Brees or what I saw in Mahomes, then if he moves up to take J.J. McCarthy, and it turns out McCarthy is that guy, Mark, giving up this year's first rounder, giving up next year's, the year after that, and Patrick Surtain, ultimately, you know what that'll be? A drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
It'll be nothing because you'll now have your guy for the next 15 to 17 years. Nobody will look back on, wow, yeah, you know, J.J. McCarthy turned out to be an elite quarterback and he's leading the Broncos to Super Bowls and all this, but man, they gave up a lot. Nobody will remember it.
Right, that's like Buffalo. Nobody remembers what they gave up to move up to grab Josh Allen.
Well, when the Patriots traded for Belichick,
yeah,
they gave up a first-round pick. People were like, what are you doing?
Yeah,
you're giving up a first-round pick for a guy who was a bust as a head coach the first time around with Cleveland? Guess what? Drop in the bucket. Drop in the bucket.
Unless, of course, J.J. McCarthy or whoever else the quarterback is, you give all that up, and then the guy turns out not to be the guy.
Yep. Could happen. But then
you hamstring your franchise for the next.
Absolutely. But what did you bring Sean Payton in to do?
To fix it. But you already hamstrung yourself with the Russell Wilson deal. So you want to dip into that one more time?
If this guy's convinced,
scorned me.
If this guy's convinced he's got his guy, he should go after him. Now, with the understanding, dude, you better be right. Because if you aren't right, you screwed us royally for years to come. But isn't that why Sean Payton's here? If you wanted to play it safe and just, hold on to your draft picks and stay where you are and even trade back, you could have hired any first-time head coach to do that. But you hired this guy with the idea that, hey, we're bringing you here for a reason. And if you have done your evaluation and you said at the combine, we're going to do this better than anybody else, we're kind of counting on it, then if he has identified his guy, damn right, he should throw caution to the wind and go for that guy.
All right, I have a theory for you.
Mm-hmm.
Just a different train of thought in regards to this draft.
Hold that thought. Okay, we'll get to that coming up next.
With an advanced network, cybersecurity solutions, and trusted partnership, Comcast Business powers more businesses than anyone. Comcast Business, powering possibilities.
Get started with internet and security for your small business for $49.99 a month for 12 months with a 2-year contract. Plus, ask how to get up to an $800 prepaid card with qualifying internet. Call today. Ends 5/5/24. Restrictions apply. New customers only with 50 megabits per second internet and security edge. Eco bill and auto pay required. Equipment, taxes, and fees extra.
You're listening to Schlereth and Evans on Denver's Sports Station, 104.3 The Fan.
You know I need your love. You got that hold over me. Long as I got your love.
Is there a reason for this? Or is this just came up in the road? This is good.
We're just
I like
testing
it.
Out.
I like it. I
you to share my life.
I love it.
I had no doubt.
Go ahead, wait, crank that up.
It's been you, woman, right down.
right there.
Yeah, getting ready for yacht rock season.
Oh, James Merrill will join us coming up in 20 minutes. He's already got Michael Malone and Jared Bednar in his crosshairs for the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
You had some thoughts on our Broncos draft conversation that we had going on that you wanted to bring up.
Yeah, I mean, you know that you're in a rebuilding process, right?
Yes.
You've made that apparent. We're going to rebuild this thing. So if you're going to rebuild and you know that you're getting your draft picks and everything back next year, and you know the odds are you're not going to be great this year, plus you've got a division now that has Jim Harbaugh in it, who's going to run the ball and he's going to actually play NFL football, not like what they've been playing. You still have Kansas City trying to three-peat with Mahomes. The Raiders, which have been your own personal bugaboo. Some of that was not his hump, but now it is his hump.
It wasn't our hump.
It is now. You've lost two straight to them.
Mm-hmm.
Home and away. So, you're going to have a whole new group of quarterbacks next year.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to elevate themselves, and people are going to be all Twitter-pated about them.
Mm-hmm.
They won't be able to get enough. And, you know, some guy's going to change your franchise's future, and there's going to be another group of can't-miss propositions in the whole nine yards. Why? Why would you mortgage all of that when you're in a rebuilding process anyhow? Why would you mortgage that for a quarterback that you're not 100% sure?
Okay, I'm glad you said that. I figured you'd go there eventually. Let me ask answer your question with a question. Do you believe Sean Payton has a healthy opinion of himself and his ability to coach offense?
Absolutely.
Do you think he has a healthy opinion of himself and his ability to coach quarterbacks?
I believe in Sean Payton.
Sure.
Okay. So, yes, I am sure that Sean Payton goes into this quarterback evaluation, all these quarterbacks, with a very healthy confidence that, you know what? You know, this guy isn't, you know, my ideal quarterback, but I absolutely could work with this guy. I could turn him into a pretty good quarterback. I think he looks at a lot of quarterbacks that way, that I could do a lot with this guy. But what if there's one of these guys that he absolutely fell in love with? If a guy who has a healthy ego and a healthy belief in himself and his ability to get more out of quarterbacks than most other guys can, sees a guy that he absolutely loves, then you got to go after that guy.
The way you're explaining it is like an oxymoron. You're saying he can make more mm-hmm. out of a guy. He can make more.
I can make this guy into a good quarterback.
Okay, if that is the criteria,
mm-hmm.
then you don't trade three or four draft picks to make a guy into a good quarterback.
But what if he sees a guy that working with this guy, we're winning Super Bowls. What if he sees a quarterback that he looks at and says, my God, this guy with his skill set, with his ability to be an extension of me out there on the field, and you look at his mind, you look at his talent, you look at his processing ability, my God, the things I can do. The things that he probably saw in Mahomes
mm-hmm.
that had him ready to take Mahomes when he already had Drew Brees. If he sees somebody in this draft that he believes can be that guy, I want him to go for him. I want him to go after him. Now, I don't want him to look at a guy like that and say, well, I'm not exactly sure, and then I'm going to give up all this stuff. If that's the case, then I want him to go back to being egomaniac Sean. Right, it's like, I can make Bo Nix into a good quarterback. Right. I can make Michael Penix into a good quarterback. But if he really sees a guy that just, it jumps off the board what he could do with this guy, he's got to go after him. Damn the price.
But I think what you're saying, though, I mean, it feels to me like under my expert tutelage, I'll make this guy great. He's not great yet, and he doesn't have transcendent skills, but with me tutoring in him, mm-hmm. I mean, he can be an extension of me. So what if we don't have great talent around him? So what? You know what? I'm going to coach him up, and Like, I don't want you to give up the entirety of the next two drafts to get a guy that, under my expert tutelage, I need that guy to be so damn good that you're like, this dude can carry an offense. You know, this guy can carry totally carry an offense. Because I think what ends up happening with most NFL quarterbacks or most guys that get drafted, they get drafted to crappy teams without great players around them, and they take a beating, both mentally and physically, and it ruins them.
Mm-hmm.
It flat out ruins them. And maybe they could have been great. Maybe they could have been, you know, starting or franchise type of quarterbacks, but because they're put in a position where they don't have that talent around them, like at this particular point in time, you wouldn't say there's anybody on this roster that absolutely eats and controls the middle of the field from a receiver position and a tight end position. So now you're going to take a college quarterback that plays the game outside the numbers into the NFL where the game is played inside the numbers and say, oh, and by the way, we don't really have anybody that dominates inside the numbers.
If Patrick Mahomes had been drafted here with all the question marks on this offense,
mm-hmm.
do you think he'd still turn out to be a great quarterback?
I think he'd turn out to be a great quarterback, yes, or a really good quarterback.
Meaning he wouldn't be ruined along the way while you were building up the talent around him. Do you
believe
that?
Would he have three Super Bowls?
Not right now. I'm saying if Patrick Mahomes he walked into a situation in Kansas City where they already were a 12-4 football team and he didn't have to play his first year.
Yeah.
Okay? If he came into a situation like here in Denver any time over these last few years and was thrown out there as a rookie, do you think he would survive? Would he be beaten down and broken by the experience like so many other young quarterbacks are?
Do I think he would survive? Yes. Do I think we would talk about him as the potential goat or the unicorn that he has become? Probably not.
Well, not until the pieces were put around him. But my point is, would he survive while you were putting the pieces around him? Because if you think he would...
Yeah, but my thought process is, yes, I think he would survive, but how much would he really know under Vic Fangio? How much would he, offensively, would he have been able to carry the load? Because let's face it, you know, they were really talented, and they have lost some of their offensive talent. Now, where they have improved is their O-line. But they have lost a lot of their offensive talent. But at that point, he was the man already. And he knew he was the man. Mm-hmm. And you wouldn't have known that here.
I think it's an easy excuse that a lot of people make for quarterbacks that fail by saying, well, they were just put in bad situations. Maybe in some cases, but honestly,
my quarterback.
If you're made of the right stuff, I think you're able to survive those growing pains. And you're going to come out on the other end just fine. Peyton Manning did. Troy Aikman did. I mean, there are any number of quarterbacks that were able to do that. So if Sean were to identify the guy that he thinks is his next great quarterback, even if you give up draft classes, even if there are thin, slim pickings around him for a while, I don't think it'll break him. If he is indeed made of the right stuff, it won't break him.
I just have I guess I come from a perspective of I'm not really a big time college football fan of the way they do offense. And so I don't look at any of these guys on film and go, that's the guy I gotta have.
Well, and I deep down I suspect that Sean will look at that the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Deep down, I suspect Sean will look at it the same way. It's why I'd be stunned if they moved up to three. Okay?
Yeah.
What I'm saying is if he does see a guy and he has completely fallen in love with him, and I do trust Sean Payton enough, and you can tell me all you want on the text line that I got to stop hanging from his yarbles. I trust him enough that he's not going to be a drafted quarterback, any quarterback guy.
Correct.
So if there is a guy that he falls in love with, then it's got to mean something. Then go for it. Why not? I'm constantly told by people, hey, man, the quarterback position's too important. You got to swing for the fences.
Right.
So I'm saying, hey, swing for the fences. I'm saying take a big swing. And now all of a sudden I'm hearing, well, the draft picks. We got to hold on to our draft picks, Mike. You're giving up too much. Jeez, folks, what do you want? You want them to swing for the fences or not? All right, coming up next, James Merrilat, who already, playoffs haven't even started, already has put Michael Malone and Jared Bednar on notice. Why? That's next. It was with absolutely no surprise whatsoever that after the Nuggets blew a 23-point lead to San Antonio and coughed up the top spot in the West, followed up by the Avalanche getting blown out by Winnipeg 7-0, probably costing them home ice in the first round against Winnipeg in their series, it was with no surprise that James Merrilat came out this weekend on social media and immediately started putting the heat on both Jared Bednar and Michael Malone. So James joins us for his weekly visit.
Morning, fellas.
You're funny. So why? Why, after both of these guys have won championships, proving you wrong, by the way, in the process?
No,
because you were calling for their heads before they both won championships. You would think that since they won championships, that would buy them some grace with you, but apparently not.
Well, first of all, I wasn't calling for their heads. I was just questioning, hey, are these the right guys to lead these teams to the pinnacle? And they did it once, but as time goes on, and as I'm watching both of them just melt down this weekend, just in embarrassing fashion, the loss to the Spurs, just inexcusable. The game against the Jets was just embarrassing. The question popped back into my mind. Are these the right guys? Were the titles aberrations, or were they, and they were just riding the coattails of great players, or are these actually really good coaches? And, you know, it's my column today at denversports.com, and if you go through it and look at the history of it, it's not as though the Avs have been the Lightning, right? Where the Lightning in the last 9 years have got two cups, been to the finals twice and lost, and been to the Eastern Conference finals and lost twice. That's 6 out of 9 years where they were just knocking on the door. The Avs are done in the first round or the second round, and then they have the aberration of the championship. The Nuggets are the same thing. So if you go through the list of three-time MVPs, there's 8 of them right now. Jokic is going to become the 9th. The most forgettable guy on that list that most people would have a hard time coming up with is Moses Malone. Why? He's the only guy in the bunch that hasn't won multiple titles. And all the rest of the names are Bird and Magic and LeBron and Michael and Wilt and Russell. If their head coaches didn't win multiple titles with them, they would have been fired. So why is that not the standard here with Michael Malone of you can't just do it once when you have the greatest player in the world on your roster, a 3-time MVP? We got to have higher expectations than just, hey, you did it once, that was great, it doesn't matter that you flame out every other year.
So what are the expectations for you? For the Nuggets, is it win a championship or Michael Malone is gone? Do they have to get a championship or get to the finals?
I think if you get to the finals and you lose to Boston, I'm not calling for anybody's head. I think if you get to the Western Conference finals and you lose an epic 7-game battle to the Thunder or the Timberwolves or whoever else, and you're in it, and it, you know, comes down to a couple of shots here and there, and Anthony Edwards hits a fadeaway to beat you one night, like, okay, it kind of depends on how it looks. If you go get swept like they did a couple of years ago in the second round by the Suns and you're never competitive, then yeah, I think you start calling for his head. I think if the Avs have a performance like they did last year in the postseason, I think you start questioning whether Jared Bednar should be the head coach. I mean, that guy's been here a long time in a sport where it's like 2.5 years and they're, you know, brooming coaches. The two other guys who won titles here in Colorado with the Avs, they didn't last very long after they won a cup. So, Bob Hartley, Mark Crawford, both of them got broomed pretty quickly when they weren't able to repeat the feat.
I'll find some middle ground here with you. I do believe that in the case of Michael Malone, they're defending champs. So it's hard to repeat as defending champs. I'm not going to put nearly the same kind of heat on Malone that I am prepared to go with you and put some heat on Bednar, because you are talking about a team with a tremendous core of players. You got arguably the best defenseman in hockey. You're going to have the MVP winner this year in Nathan MacKinnon. And if you don't make it past the second round, that will mean that in 6 of the last 7 years, you failed to get past the second round. Now, the 1 year you did was glorious.
Right.
But you're right. Over a 7 year span, if you're not getting out of the second round of the playoffs in six of them, yeah, I think it's worth exploring. It's worth talking about. Sure.
And it becomes, and it sounds funny to go, yeah, but with a championship season. I get it. Like, that's a huge achievement. It's not easy to do. But that does become the aberration at that point. And it's hard not to look at it and say, hey, are you wasting Nathan MacKinnon's prime? Are you wasting Nikola Jokic's prime? Because they should have been, you know, either having multiple parades or at least knocking on the door multiple times. And that won't have happened if these two teams have early exits again.
In regards to the Avs, though, couldn't you look at Tampa and say, hey, you've got one of the best goaltenders in the National Hockey League, and you've made this great run.
Good call.
With the Avs, that's one position. Like, I would look at the front office and say, hey, you have not been able to give, you know, you have not been able to give Bedzy consistent goaltending, somebody that you can count on. Like, we're having this conversation right now. Would you trust Enonen more than you would trust Gorgiev? We're going into the playoffs.
Yeah. No, it's a bad situation, and it's not a perfect roster, and that's a big spot to not have it kind of dialed in, obviously. So I'm with you. But you still have three of the top seven players at the beginning of the season when they came out with that list. Three of the top seven players in the league are on your roster. They could have had a great goaltender on, what was it, Saturday, the 7-0 game? Wouldn't have mattered. Like, they still couldn't get anything done. They got blanked at home. So it's not a perfect roster, but at some point, and this is the point I make with Malone all the time, because everybody likes to victory lap me. Heck, Mike, you did at the start of the segment.
Sure.
You know, this point I make with Malone, when has he won a series where he didn't have the advantage? They had home court advantage every round last year, and they had the better roster every single round. They've lost at home to the Blazers in a game 7. The bubble, they were down 3-1, but it's the bubble. It doesn't really count. You didn't have to go on the road and win a couple of times when they were coming back from 3-1 down in those series. He's never won a series where he's had to outcoach the other guy. Last year in 20 games, it was the exact same 8-man rotation other than garbage time at the end of blowouts every single game. To some extent, He wheeled the balls out and said, "Go do it, guys!" Like, that's what he did. He was the easiest coaching job of all time.
But we don't hold the greatness of Greg Popovich or the greatness of Phil Jackson against them by saying, "Well, yeah, you did all that, but you know, Phil, you had Michael and Scottie and Kobe and Shaq."
Sure.
I mean, nobody is picking apart Phil Jackson's legacy.
Well, he's also got 11, not one.
Okay, but
and Del Harris didn't win with Shaq and Kobe. And Phil Collins on the mind. Doug Collins didn't win with Jordan. So, you know, those guys came in. He came in and did something that other people couldn't do. But if we get to the end of this run and Jokic wins 4 MVPs, 5 MVPs, and he has one title.
All right. Well,
that's going to be a miss.
Yes. Okay. I'll give you
I'm
that.
I'm just ahead of the curve, Mike.
Okay, yeah, you're ahead of the curve. Well, were you ahead of the curve when you said that both Malone... You did say Malone and Bednar. You weren't just questioning them. You were saying they need to go if they don't do this. And then they both won championships.
If we fast forward to 2028, you guys may be going, man, that guy was right. He was right.
I got to wait till 2028 to say you were wrong?
It might be...
Can I do it quicker than that?
It might be, you know, here in a month. If they both get bounced in the first round, Nuggets aren't going to, but let's say they do, hypothetically.
Mm-hmm.
I think we would be having conversations about, man, have they wasted Jokic? Have they wasted Jokic's prime years with a guy that wasn't able to get enough out of him they should have?
Last one. We are 1 week away from the NFL draft. You getting any clarity? Anything? What's your gut tell you about what the Broncos are going to do?
I think they're going to push all their chips into the middle of the table. I think they're going to riverboat gamble this thing. They're going to trade up for J.J. McCarthy, and he's going to be a giant whiff.
Wow.
I think that's what they're going to do. I don't want that to happen. I think they're going to be bold, which I kind of like, although, man, you can't keep giving away first-round picks.
Uh-huh.
I just don't think that's the guy to... I would love it to see him draft Brock Bowers at 12, figure out where you got to get Michael Penix Jr. late in the first or early in the second, and that's what you walk out of the draft with. That would be great to me. Trading up to get J.J. McCarthy at 4?
I don't think they're trading up.
No?
No. I don't think they're trading up.
Too expensive?
I don't think there's anybody. There's nobody. I called it my brass in the pocket theory. There's nobody that has enough clout. There's too many questions about every guy and the skill set of every guy and college football in general to think that I'm going to give up the farm to move up to get a guy that's, hey, it's nice, but is he all that?
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I agree with you. I just hope they agree with you. That's the way I'll put it.
Okay.
All right, James.
Thank you, James.
Never boring. James Merrilat, senior editor, guru at denversports.com on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline. A lot to react to. We will unpack all that coming up next.